Randy Cross will be in this chair, inching even closer towards the initial reveal of the college football playoff rankings for the first time this season. We both kind of agree, I guess, on Oklahoma and Notre Dame rounding out the top four with Alabama and Georgia.
Yeah. I told you, I keep vacillating.
Right.
I go back and forth. That's what that fancy word means, folks. I'm going back and forth between Wisconsin. Now, I believe in Wisconsin's defense. They're damn good.
Yeah.
Now, their offense, running the ball, and Jonathan Taylor, the freshman sensation, he went down with an ankle injury. Let's see how severe that is. But I just can't hitch my wagon to Honeybrook, the quarterback.
Yeah, and my problem with them, too, is I see it ending against Ohio State in the Big Ten title game. So it's almost, to me, like a waste to talk about them right now, even though they're undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't. I got to see them win, stay undefeated, then win that game, and then
right.
I'll have to put them in. But right now, I just, because I see that coming, I almost don't even count them.
Jim Leonard has done an excellent job.
Yeah.
First year defensive coordinator, first time he's ever been a defensive coordinator, and the former New York Jet, longtime defensive back in NFL, has done an excellent job with that defense. Remember, one of their best players, Cici, the linebacker, went down before the season started, but they're badass on that side of the ball. They're tremendous, and they have been for the last 5 or 6 years, no matter who's been the coordinator. Remember, Aranda was there, then you had Justin Wilcox. Aranda's now at LSU, Wilcox head coach at Cal, and now Jim Leonard. So this has been a dynamite defense for a while now, and they're still holding serve on that side of the ball. But offensively, if they're not running the rock, I don't think they can win any ball games passing it.
855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. The time is yours, as Andy Reid likes to say. Give us a call. Ask Brian Jones anything, particularly about college football. But, I mean, really, really anything at 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. First on the phone lines is Andrew from New York. Andrew, welcome to the show. Thanks, Andrew. Long-time listener, first-time caller. So let's go back to Jim McElwain, where we ended in hour number one. Which Harbaugh brother do you want to give the Florida job to this morning? Did you have time to beat Jones on the phones yesterday?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I was busy, as we've already discussed, launching a new show, at least in the New York area. There are so many names that have surfaced. Scott Foster at UCF, they're still undefeated. USF is not undefeated anymore, losing to Houston and not scoring 30 points. They scored 30 points in, going back to last season. And so Charlie Strong was a defensive coordinator there and won multiple national titles there as a defensive coordinator for Urban Meyer. And, you know, his name has surfaced. Willie Taggart, who did a hell of a job at USF, who's now at Oregon, his name has surfaced as well. And Dan Mullins, as I mentioned when we were going to break the last hour, now at Mississippi State, and it seems like they've righted the ship after losing games on the road at Georgia, at Auburn, getting thumped, not even close, and now have won back-to-back games and go on the road and knock off Texas A&M in grand fashion. So, you know, with the offensive challenges they've had there, you would think they would go back to an offensive-minded coach. That's why Jim McElwain got the gig.
Right.
Because of what he was able to accomplish at Alabama as an offensive coordinator and then as a head coach at Colorado State. But that offense is still not fixed. And so I would think Mullins would be the leader right now. Or you know, Scott Frost is an offensive-minded guy. Nebraska is going to be in the running for him since he's one of their own. And Willie Taggart's an offensive guy as well. So I would think it'd be an offensive guy who would be the favorite to get that that gig.
I think it's since 2009. That's the last time the Gators averaged 400 yards of offense, which, not to oversimplify things, is kind of not hard to do in college football.
Yeah.
I mean, you can rack up yards and points pretty easily.
Right, and 400 is what you're probably middle of the pack. You're probably ranking 40th, 50th in the country if you're just doing that, and they can't seem to do that here of late. So it's just amazing. They have the defense, but they don't have the offense, and that's what Will Muschamp struggled with. And of course, he's now at South Carolina, and it's just I'm bewildered that the offensively they can't get right.
You know, it's amazing to me reading all of the different takes last night after this became official in particular, that so many people who follow the Gators and know the program, blame is not the right word, but blame this still on Steve Spurrier. I mean, we're, what, five coaches removed
from
Spurrier? Well, no, again, not in a negative way. just that the specter of Spurrier mm-hmm. and everything that was about him
fun and, gun.
And the program yeah. and the production, that they're always still chasing this. And Urban Meyer gave it to him, and then Muschamp hasn't, and McElwain hasn't. Because from a football perspective, from all the negatives, I mean, they still won 22 games over the last 2 years.
Right.
19 in conference, two division titles. Yes, right. A weaker division than the West. But they, you know, in certain areas, they got the job done. But now they couldn't wait to get rid of him. The door's open by the death threat lie, and out he goes. Maybe they don't pay him his full buyout left. But so many folks connecting the dots back to everyone just wants to, you know, to and why not, reinvigorate, you know, all the good feelings of Spurrier, and they can't find the guy that can recruit and then develop and produce in that way.
Well, yes, they won the East Division back-to-back years, and they got thumped, though, in the conference championship game. It was never close.
Right.
So that's an issue as well. It's one thing to win the East, and the East has been down. It's been anyone.
Someone had to win it, I guess, right?
Yeah, someone had to win it. And yet you don't show well when you get to the conference championship game. So that's been the problem. And now you have all this drama on the periphery that McElwain brought upon himself. And you have what you had this weekend, which is him being out.
Do you want to throw in Bob Stoops?
Bob Stoops would be, his name should be mentioned, and there are going to be suitors for him. And he has said unequivocally that I am done with coaching. I am done. But yeah, why not make the call? And just to hear him say it to your face, you know, or to your ear, say, yeah, I'm done. I'm finished with coaching. And but why wouldn't you make that call? He was there for some championship runs as well, and then took his ball to Oklahoma, and he's legendary there, the all-time winningest coach now there for the Sooners. So, I would make that call to see if he's serious about being on the sidelines.
What about Chip?
Or off the sidelines. And Chip Kelly?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think people are going to reach out to him as well. That his offensive mind. He's now doing studio work, and so, yeah, he would be on that list. They need to find someone to resurrect their offense. So anyone who has had success offensively, get ready. He would be calling you.
Yeah, I like Scott Frost. I think you go young, you go dynamic. He's taken Mackenzie Milton, I remember this morning, was a two-star recruit.
Yeah.
Now he's among the leaders in efficiency in the nation passing the football. And that's the kind of development that apparently has been lacking in Florida under McElwain.
And he was there at Oregon with Kelly and then Helfrich, so right. He knows that Kelly those principles. So yeah, go get a guy that knows those principles who took UCF from a team in 2015 that didn't win a damn game, and they went 6-7 the following year, go to a bowl game, and now they're sitting there undefeated.
855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Your chance to ask Brian Jones a college football question. Saturday afternoon as well, you might have been paying attention to your SEC game because you're a good company man.
I was paying attention to all of them. We have such a luxury to have all those screens in front of us. 16 screens in front of you.
And food. Zucker's hair.
And Zucker's hair notwithstanding.
Heisel playing the guitar in the corner.
Damn good afternoon. I mean, it was amazing. All those three dirty games. Just to keep up with all the action that was going on. Our game was, of course, a blowout. So we were looking elsewhere. And I'm sitting there screaming and yelling because of my picks and watching those. Just freaking die. It was just a wonderful afternoon of college football.
So as Barkley takes the opening kickoff back 97 yards, and it's 14-0 in less than 4 minutes, are you giving Ohio State any chance?
Yes. I never felt comfortable. I picked Penn State to win it, and I thought it would be a close ball game. I wasn't as confident in Penn State winning this ball game as I was with them beating Michigan, because Michigan, speaking of being offensively challenged, they're up there in the top
quarterback
five.
Quarterback change worked a little
bit. Yes, it did. Yeah, they brought in Mr.
Peters.
Indiana football.
I don't remember his first name. His last name is Peters.
Yeah, I think it was Brandon. Isn't it Brandon? He's pretty skilled at handing the ball off.
They were playing Rutgers, too.
Yeah, they looked better offensively when he came into the ball game. But I wasn't comfortable. I didn't think Penn State would hold that lead, and of course they did, and they were up 18, then 15 during the fourth quarter. You have a block punt. That was pretty much the death knell there when they had that block punt. But offensively, they lost their left tackle. number 52, and they couldn't block ice, as I said earlier. I mean, it was just amazing. That defensive line for Greg Schiano ate that Penn State offensive line up. And if McSorley didn't have any wheels, he would have been eaten up as well. But they couldn't do anything offensively because they couldn't block. And Barkley, yeah, he had the long touchdown run. He had the kickoff return as well. But other than that, nothing. 42, 44 yards rushing.
If you subtract the 36-yard touchdown, he had 8 yards on 20 carries.
Right, yeah. They ate him up. And then defensively, they lost their best pass rush in the first series of the ball game, and they couldn't do anything on that side of the ball. Receivers running wide open or pass interference penalties. It was just a calamity of errors for that defense and for that offensive line.
After Ohio State was wetting themselves to start the game,
they opened up
the door to fall behind.
They had a ton of penalties, false start. How do you get out so many false starts and you're at home? But they amassed a few, and then JT Barrett took over, and he was exceptional.
I mean, goodness.
He now the career leader, 90. He needed one touchdown to break the tie with Drew Brees for career touchdown passes in the Big Ten, and he did that and more. What did he end up with? 4, I believe, in the ball game. But, offensively, they took over there in the second half, but their defense is what kept them in that ball game. They were outstanding.
Barrett completed his last 16 passes. He was 13 of 13 for 170 and 3 scores.
They couldn't get to
in the
him.
Fourth quarter.
They could not. They had
and they
no
didn't cover
pass
anybody
rush.
Either. Dudes were just open.
Right.
He had time to throw.
No pass rush and no coverage down the field whatsoever. You could tell they were just hanging on in that ball game. They were hanging on because they didn't have their best offensive lineman. He went out of the ball game. And then defensively, they did nothing. Nothing in that second half.
And you were right. I mean, this game completely stole my attention. I was prepared to have the second screen to go back and forth between your game and NBC, and then your game got a little out of hand, so now it was just on Notre Dame and NC State. But I couldn't not watch this Penn State-Ohio State game, and every time you thought, okay, that's the Penn State score at the end of the game, they would just keep, and then relentless JT Barrett. I don't know about Heisman votes and they said the broadcast, this guarantees him a spot in New York. Who knows? But that was...
If he keeps it up, and he's been dynamite, 18 touchdowns heading these last 5 ball games. He had 21 coming into this one, and now, he, of course, has added to that stat. And so if he keeps this up, I don't see why he shouldn't be invited. And he was on the Heisman list a few years ago before he went down with his knee injury, and the team went on to win a national title. So, he's got to be in the conversation. A lot of guys made some noise. And how about Arizona? And I picked against my man Rich Rod, but they just keep rolling with this Khalil Tate. This guy is phenomenal. Over 100 yards rushing each and every week. Of course, he jumped on the scene with that win at Colorado with over 300 yards rushing, and they just cannot stop this young man. He has these breakaway runs in each and every ball game. So they post 58 on Washington State, and then USC bounces back versus Arizona State in a big way. There was some just damn good football this past weekend.
Yeah, it was overwhelming.
It really was.
And even the 12 o'clock window was kind of I just couldn't get into Wisconsin, Illinois.
You couldn't get in. It's Illinois, but you couldn't get into the Texas and Baylor, man. Come on.
No, I didn't. But let's talk about your boy Tom Herman, who I think tried to diplomatically, but still, I just wonder if this is a fight you want to fight. Kind of calling out the Texas students for not being in their seats and being loud and rowdy soon enough, but. It is currently Texas football, and he did acknowledge we need to win more and give you a reason to show up. But it was also Baylor,
right?
And it was an 11 a.m. kick too. I mean,
right.
That's asking a lot for college kids. But it also wasn't just Saturday. But I just always get nervous when coaches complain about attendance, because while it might be valid, it just seems cheap to me and can put you in a place you don't want to be in.
Well,
but he did it, and we'll see what happens.
You control what you need to control, and that's on the field. And so you put a product out there, and they will show up. And he hasn't done that. And as you stated, he has alluded to that. Well, just leave it at that. Just leave it at if we win, they'll be there. And he was upset because a week ago you have a top 10 Oklahoma State team that comes to Austin, and there were a lot of empty seats in the student section. And you have a top 10 team that comes in. You would think everyone would want to see you possibly knock off that team, and they almost did. 13-10 loss in overtime. But just control what you can control, and that's winning. And it, trust me, you start winning, they will be there.
Last question for Ask Brian.
You're damn good with these questions, Andrew. You should call more often.
Who is D'Angelo Palladino?
D'Angelo Palladino.
Mm-hmm.
I'm stumped.
D'Angelo Palladino ran for 297 yards and 3 touchdowns as Fordham ended Lehigh's.
Oh, Fordham!
Lehigh hadn't lost a Patriot League game since 2015. Came to the Bronx. Our boy Chase Edmonds still out, compromising his what was supposed to be a record-setting senior season. In steps the young D'Angelo Palladino, 297 and 3 touches.
Wow.
45-35 Rams.
So he Wally Pipp, Chase?
Yeah, later, Chase.
Oh, man.
That was fun while it lasted.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Way to go, D'Angelo Palladino.
I hate Lehigh like you hate the Red Sox.
Really?
Like you hate Oklahoma. I don't have a Boomer Sooner. That's just that they've always been annoying.
Lehigh. What's the mascot?
The Mountain Hawks.
The Mountain Hawks. Yeah. You don't like Lehigh Mountain Hawks. And they're in Philly, right?
Pennsylvania. Yeah. Easton, I think. I don't want to know.
But really, hatred for the Mountain Hawks.
Yeah.
They beat up on Fordham when you were there?
Yeah. But this is my favorite Dave Clawson story, who's now the head coach at Wake Forest. Right. He was the head coach of Fordham.
They had a big win over Louisville.
Did. Yeah, Louisville. What a free fall there, huh?
42-32.
But this is Dave Clawson's first year, inherited a program that was lost a lot of guys. They didn't win a game. They're 0-11 his first year. Had two good running backs. Both were injured, though, for the season finale at Lehigh. Lehigh was good. We're there at Lehigh. He makes the two running backs dress and go through warm-ups. There's no way they're playing. He tells us on the radio crew, they're not playing, but I'm putting them out there, so Lehigh has to think about it. You cannot tell anybody they're not playing.
Well, he was at Lehigh.
This game was at Lehigh. Lehigh's going to, if there was a line in that game, it was 45 points.
Right.
Lehigh's giving us 45. He dresses these two running backs to spook Lehigh, which may have maybe made them win by 5 touchdowns instead of 6. I'm like, Coach, I love the confidence. But this ain't, you're not spooking them with, you know, it's not Barry Sanders you're putting in the uniform.
Right.
They don't care that Kerwin Watson's not playing. But that's the crazy. Athletes and coaches are insane.
Yep, I would agree with that.
That man thought on that day that was going to make a difference. That maybe was going to help them win. I think the final score was 51-0.
Oh,
if I remember correctly.
Ouch.
Yeah, but Dave's rebounded well.
Okay, so you hate Lehigh.
Hate Lehigh.
Wow.
Hate him.
Okay.
855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. It's Gio and Jones on a Monday morning. Bogus in for Gio. Brian Jones, now a TV star.
Yeah, right.
Inching towards just having no need for any of us as the star and the brand grows now into
I need you. I need you to watch
television,
which
outside
you didn't do.
Of the I did see the beginning of your pregame show and Zucker called you the better man when he intro'd you.
Yeah,
I did see that.
You did see that.
And your brown jacket this week?
That was camel.
Camel, okay.
Yeah, you weren't feeling it?
No. I liked it.
Oh.
I think better than the plum suit.
You don't like my plum stuff? Oh, I love the plum.
Well, I could wear the camel color. I couldn't wear the plum one, so I think that's why I liked it better.
Ah, there you go. Yeah, you probably couldn't pull off the maroon. Burgundy.
Let's get back into the NFL. The Buccaneers stink.
Ugh.
The Saints have won 5 in a row. But does it matter in the NFC? That's all next at 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227 when Gio and Jones comes back on CBS Sports Radio. This is the number one song in the Bogus family charts right now.
Really?
Yeah, my little guy loves this song.
Cool.
Yeah.
How old's the little guy?
3, almost 4.
Oh.
Thinks this is the coolest song going.
I like this song as well. I was jamming this on the way in.
But
yeah.
It now plays incessantly through the World Series.
Right.
So I'm about to hate it.
Overkill.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, we're still good with it.
Yeah. Way to go, little guy. What's the little guy's name?
Jake.
What's up, Jake? Jake from State Farm.
He gets mad. Like when I was on MLB Network, he tries to get my attention on the TV. He thinks he can hear me, so he thinks that I can hear him.
He's
like, hey dad, and just looks.
So when you got home, what did he say to you? He was upset with you.
Why didn't you say hello to me,
Jake?
Yeah.
Okay, dog. Yeah.
But apparently it's a kid thing. I saw Sam Ponder's daughter doing the same thing, because I guess Christian Ponder does college games now.
Oh, does he?
So she posted a video of her daughter at the TV going, "Dad, same thing." So I guess kids think that TV's a two-way. But he's never tried to talk to Mickey or Doc McStuffins.
Right.
But he sees me and he tries to talk to me.
Hmm.
And then gets mad when I don't respond.
Hmm.
It's sweet. And a little scary.
It's scary. Yeah. I don't know about sweet. It's scary.
No, it's sweet.
Yeah.
Kid. Hopefully he gets over it. My daughter is six and she's figured it out. So hopefully there you go.
There's hope for it.
Exactly.
All right. So she probably doesn't even pay attention to you on television, does she?
She couldn't care less.
Yeah.
Could not care less. Yep. That's fine. Wife too. It's all right. Mm.
I know. What's up with that?
Your wife cares.
No, my mother-in-law does.
Mikey, you met your wife yesterday.
Yeah. What'd you think of Gladys?
Very sweet.
Oh, okay.
Very nice.
Not what he texted us.
Huh?
It's not what he texted us.
She's overstayed her welcome.
Mike likes her more than you do.
Get back on that plane and go back to Florida.
Speaking of overstaying your welcome, before he does that, Brad's here with your update.
All right, guys, nobody could blame me if you turned off the World Series last night with the Dodgers up 4-0 and Clayton Kershaw on the mound, but that's when the madness kicked in at Minute Maid Park. The Astros tied the game at 4, only to fall behind again 7-4. Astros tied it again, then led the Dodgers 12-9 going to the ninth. L.A. tied the game, and they went extra innings again.
Bregman 1-for-4 tonight. First pitch. And Alex Lyons in the left center field. That's a base hit. Kershaw around third and coming home. Ethier up with the baseball. The throw to the plate. Not in time. Astros win. Astros
13-12,
win.
13-12, the final in 10. Robert Ford, Astros Radio Network on the call. A.J. Hinch's club now up 3-2.
It's hard to put into words all the twists and turns in that game, the emotion, doing it home in front of our home crowd. Just exactly what you expect to come to the park with Keuchel and Kershaw pitching. You know, just a perfect setup game for a bunch
Astros
of runs.
Astros will go with Justin Verlander on the mound opposite Rich Hill for Game 6 in L.A. on Tuesday night. Meanwhile, the Nationals reportedly have their new manager, Cubs bench coach Dave Martinez, and word is Gabe Kapler, the front runner for the Phillies' job. Sunday Night Football, Steelers went into Detroit and beat the Lions 20-15. Juju Smith-Schuster, 7 catches, 193 yards, including a 97-yard touchdown. Russell Wilson, a career-high 452 through the air, 4 touchdowns. He had the game-winning 18-yard score to Jimmy Graham with 21 seconds to go. The Seahawks outscored the Texans in Seattle 41-38.
The guys made plays all night, came up big for us. The line did a great job giving enough time there at the end there and just making the throws. And it was a true testament of our team.
Deshaun Watson, what a performance in the loss. 402 through the air, and he had 4 touchdowns. The other late game, the Cowboys beat the Redskins in Washington 33-19. Elsewhere, the Eagles 7-1 beat the Niners 33-10. Philly has won 6 in a row. Saints have won 5 straight, 20-12 over the Bears. Patriots are 6-2. They top the Chargers 21-13. It's the Pats and Steelers at 6-2, tied for the best record in the AFC. The Chiefs can join them tonight. They face the Broncos Monday Night Football in Kansas City. College football, Florida's parting ways with head coach Jim McElwain in the middle of his third season, despite back-to-back trips to the SEC championship game. NBA games of note, the Knicks beat the Cavaliers in Cleveland 114-95. Warriors lost to the Pistons 115-107. Guys?
Brad, thanks so much. Here's today's poll question, @GUNJones on Twitter. If you were owed a $12.76 million buyout like Jim McElwain is, how much of that would you take after making up death threats, apparently? What would you settle for?
Half.
Yeah?
I'd take half. It's owed to me.
Maybe you could get me down to 8.
Yeah.
And then after that, we might have a real fight.
I'd take half. You'd want 8?
Yeah, I mean, that's good. Half's
just
a lot.
Just lop a quarter off of it and take half.
I mean, it's almost 13, so yeah, I think I get down to 8 pretty easily if I made up death threats, which it seems like he might have done, or manipulated like one angry blog post into a need for security and sympathy. Man, what a way to go out.
I'm going to say half. Yeah, this is of my own volition. Give me half. And I'm out.
I mean, either way, he's winning.
Right.
And living
either
the American
way.
Dream of getting
exactly.
paid to not work.
Yes.
What an amazing thing
agree.
That is.
Yep.
855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Phone lines open now. We get busy in our third and final hour. Ross Tucker, SiriusXM NFL Radio. I believe he had Jets-Falcons yesterday on Westwood One. So we'll break down that game and everything else that went on in Week 8 with Ross to kick off hour number 3. We close the show with Howard Griffith of the Big Ten Network. More on the Buckeyes, the Nittany Lions, those Badgers, and everything else from Saturday in college football. But sticking with the NFL and the NFC and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I am a Hard Knocks pushover. You go on Hard Knocks, and you're going to win me over, and I'm going to care about you and watch you and think what you can do. Now, before they were on Hard Knocks, I thought that the Bucs could win the NFC South, could be a force in the NFC. I was buying Jameis Winston like Deshaun Watson. Yep. Then they draft the tight end with Mike Evans. Doug Martin's coming back. And they have just been terrible. I mean, they can't stop anybody. Yeah. They scored 3 points yesterday against Carolina. And now they're 2-5, four straight losses.
Yeah, back-to-back games where the Panthers haven't allowed a touchdown. And then you pick off Winston twice there to close out the win. And Cam Newton got back to playing well. And he threw two touchdown passes, I believe. One, I know one for sure to Kelvin Benjamin. And I think McCaffrey got one. But
McCaffrey did not score.
He did not score.
No.
Okay. I'm with you. I thought that Cutter, of course, they fired Lovie Smith and they replaced him with Dirk Cutter, and he's done nothing. He was supposed to elevate the play of Jameis Winston. You go out and you sign a free agent like Deshaun Jackson, and then you draft O.J. Howard. So you have plenty of ammunition on the offensive side of the ball, not to mention Mike Evans you drafted a couple years ago, first rounder, and yet this offense stinks. They can't do anything. Defensively, they played better. Yesterday, you give out 17 points. That's damn good.
Right, they've been getting gashed through the air, so that didn't happen at least.
Right, yeah, they played better defensively than they had been playing. And so now Dirk Cutter, you have to think that he along with a few other coaches like a Hugh Jackson, maybe even a Marvin Lewis, he can't be too comfortable in his gig because he hasn't fixed this offense. We just talking about McElwain not fixing the Florida offense. Same can be said about Cutter in Tampa.
And he got that job. He got promoted from OC because he was doing so well with Jameis. Now he's the head coach, and Jameis has leveled off, and you know, and he's not healthy right now, you'd think. But before that, the issues already began. Now, you mentioned Marvin Lewis. Now, they almost lost to the Colts yesterday. They're losing to the Colts, and then Jacoby Brissett has a tip ball that Carlos Dunlap, I think, actually tipped it and then caught it himself and scored for the go-ahead touchdown. There are a couple of throws that Brissett makes in that game, and Indy wins. Now, he had T.Y. Hilton open by three steps for a touchdown earlier in that game and underthrew him and let the defender get back and break it up. That was a game they could have lost at home to the hapless Colts. They're still technically alive, I guess, behind the Steelers in the AFC North. They're 3-4, right? And Pittsburgh 6-2. So they're hanging around. But I want the bottom to drop out of this because they need everything new. Marvin's got to go. If he's going to go to the front office, that's fine.
Right.
They just need a new head coach. They just need a new voice. This thing has been done with. Probably should have fired him after last year. The lack of playoff success. There's still the lack of responsibility on the field and the discipline, and the offense is just, I mean, I guess it's been a little better since Lazor took over for Zampezi, but it's just not good enough.
Well, the D word, you mentioned it, discipline, and again, stupid penalties, personal fouls.
Yep.
They hurt themselves with these penalties, and we've seen this time and time again with this football team. No self-awareness whatsoever in these moments, and that's why they're sitting there 3-4. Not to mention the getting out of the gate slow offensively. I just don't understand why they keep having these self-inflicted wounds. Stop it. What part of that don't you get that's going to cost you ball games? Almost cost you another one yesterday. So who knows what's going to happen with Marvin Lewis. Mike Brown is so loyal to this guy.
Yeah.
And that's fine. It's good to have someone that's in your corner, especially in ownership. That's great to be in that position. But this football team has no discipline whatsoever.
Jason Lockhand IV wrote this yesterday. I think it was him. That if they move Marvin Lewis to the front office, they could hire Hugh Jackson, who presumably will get fired or at least would want to leave Cleveland to come back. Now, maybe things are different for Hugh when he has talented players or more talented players than he does in Cleveland right now. But, I mean, he is – I don't know that he should get a job right away again. Second time around can help guys. But, I mean, this has just been a disaster on every single front for some of the same reasons. A lack of discipline, the lack of development. They've completely mishandled Kaiser, as everybody saw coming. So I don't even
know – shouldn't have drafted it. Well, I think the kid should have gone back to college, but he didn't. He put his name in the hat, and he got drafted. And don't begrudge anyone getting their money, but to overlook the other talents in the draft, and especially Deshaun Watson, that makes no sense. So they have it's not just Hugh Jackson in that locker room on the field, but it's the front office as well. They've struggled in that area, and as Rich Gannon said a week or so ago, you have baseball guys drafting football players. And maybe Hugh does go back to Cincinnati because that offense was thriving when he was at the helm.
855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. You played in New Orleans. I saw you mention Jim Mora again to remind
playoffs.
Us on Saturday afternoon that you played in the NFL.
Even though he didn't say that about us.
He
said we couldn't do diddly-poo, but he said, made the playoffs comments when he was there with the Colts.
Now, you want to believe in the Saints who have won 5-0?
Yeah,
and
man.
Won a game yesterday for the first time in a long time when Drew Brees didn't throw a touchdown
pass? How about that? I think this defense is growing up. A bunch of young guys out there, but the defense is definitely starting to play much, much better. And what a gruesome, before we continue to laud the Saints, a gruesome injury for Zach Miller. And to add insult to injury, to take the touchdown away. Clearly that was a touchdown. Were these the same officials that were up here when the Jets were playing the Patriots and they took the touchdown away from Austin Seferian Jenkins? I mean, what was that? That's a damn touchdown! What were they looking at?
I mean, even if it wasn't a touchdown, I could make the argument that you should have given him one for almost catching it after dislocating his kneecap.
Oh, what a gross injury. How do you not say that's a
touchdown? But it was a catch. I mean, he can't just say that he rolled over and then he put the ball down in pain to check on his dislocated kneecap. It was called a touchdown. And then they took it away. It wasn't even like they did the call off the stand thing. I mean, they called it a touchdown and they reversed it. And I don't know anymore. And I know this is repetitive and it sound. I don't get it. I don't understand why this one situation of going to the ground and completing the catch needs like five subsequent things when you can run and put the nose of the football across the first centimeter of the goal line, and that's a touchdown. The play's over.
It's over.
But this guy's got to do five different things and not dislocate his kneecap to get a touchdown.
Yeah. Amazing that they took that off the board. But this, as I was saying, this defense, you got rookies, and one of the rookies, it was a good weekend for Ohio State because Marshawn Lattimore, a big interception there late in the ball game of a fellow rookie, Mitchell Trubisky of the Bears. And these guys are growing up, and they're playing well back there in that secondary and just across the board as far as that defense.
I think Eddie Jackson, by the way, in that game stripped. There was two Saint fourth quarter fumbles that kept that game close.
Yeah,
one was
his buddy, Ingram.
Mark Ingram of the football.
Yeah, Alabama on Alabama crime there.
The game of the day, though, yesterday was in Seattle. Mm. Much like Penn State, Ohio State for me, it completely dominated my attention. Almost nothing for Cowboys and Redskins because I couldn't stop watching Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson. So there was that, and there was pregame stuff as well, and postgame stuff as well involving the Texans and Bob McNair, which began after you guys went off the air on Friday. So there's
right,
on that front
as
well.
Oh, hell broke loose when we were off the air.
We'll do that next on Gio and Jones on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
What are you doing? If you still care.
And who is this singing?
This is SOS Band, man.
This is who?
The SOS Band. Boy, y'all need to get out.
I mean, that's the
second. I know all the rock groups, classic rock, pop groups, and y'all know nothing about the brothers.
No.
The sisters.
I had Keith Sweat. I had Jodeci. I've got Belle Biv DeVoe.
Oh, you were down with
that? I can sing Poison, Boys to Men. I got you, but you've stumped me on the SOS Band and Guy.
Guy? Really?
That's new to me.
Oh, man, Guy.
Nothing on that.
Guy, the guy from Guy went to Blackstreet. Blackstreet was after Guy.
Blackstreet, I know.
I know. Well, what's his name? The main guy in Blackstreet used to be with Guy. I forget his name.
He left Guy to go to Blackstreet?
Yeah.
Was there drama? Or did Guy just fade?
One of the main guys in Guy, he was always in trouble or something like that.
So Guy wasn't working
Guy
anymore.
Was three guys. Yeah.
Interesting.
He wasn't working. But they had a hit album. Their first album was Dynamite.
If I'm being honest, that's a terrible name for a band.
Guy?
Guy?
Yeah.
Come on.
Really?
Come on.
DUI.
When marketing genius behind that. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. So you guys go off the air on Friday, and it actually, I try not, you know, because I was here, and I read it while I was here, but I can't remember the exact time. So maybe the story came out while you guys were on the air with the Bob McNair quote, an ESPN story, which came from the meetings between owners and players in New York a couple of weeks ago. And maybe there's one today. No one seems to know about that. And Bob McNair said, we can't let the inmates run the prison. Mm-hmm. So everyone read that and freaked out, for the most part, rightfully so. And then he issues a statement through the team apologizing for it, which obviously confirms that he said it, but then said, I wasn't talking about our players. I thought that was a weird, like, throwaway. I wasn't talking about the Texans. I was talking about the players on the other 31 NFL teams, because all of my guys are Saints, and I have no problem with any of my Texans.
Right, right.
But then on Saturday, there's a follow-up statement, and this is after DeAndre Hopkins and Freeman just walked out of the facility and didn't go to practice on Friday after this. There's another statement from McNair explaining that the inmates he was referencing was the league office,
yeah,
who's been doing things without ownership's approval or advice, whatever it may be. Now, I think that's a very intriguing side topic if, yeah, he actually was talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
But we get into now angry players, Dwayne Brown, you know, doubling, tripling down on Bob McNair being somewhat of a, I don't know, talking about how heartbroken he was when Barack Obama was elected president. There was Dwayne Brown also told Pro Football Talk about it post-Donald Sterling that Bob McNair's advice to the players was, be careful what you say in private because it may get out, not don't be racist,
yeah,
and don't be a horrible person. It was hide if you're doing something bad,
yeah,
make sure no one's recording it and might blackmail with you,
right,
blackmail you with it.
Yeah, so it's interesting, and you know, this is a difficult topic because of Bob McNair and all the good he has done, but you,
right,
really don't know people who they really are, their heart, until you get in situations like this. And I've always said, and I said it during the Donald Sterling situation, a lot of people who don't like those of color will tolerate black as long as you can help them keep their money in the black. And we know the makeup of the NFL. We definitely know the makeup of the NBA. It's almost exclusively black, and NFL is 60-70% as far as its participants.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I can understand why those guys were upset. Dwayne Brown now sharing more insight into the dealings of his owner. It's not helping the situation, definitely not helping Bob McNair, who has apologized profusely a number of times now in front of this club. They still decided to take the tactic, which they showcased yesterday prior to the game versus the Seahawks. So in one instance, it's disheartening that, you know, we're seeing this man for who he really is. But in another, it's great. I think this has been wonderful. You know, the whole time Barack Obama was president, you heard the other side saying, "Oh, he's divisive and he's not bringing us together." Well, you didn't want to be brought together. And basically, what his presidency showed us was there are still a lot of bigots and racists out there.
Well, let me say a couple of things, at least from my perspective, on Bob McNair. What we know about him publicly, there's no comparison to Donald Sterling, who is just a horrible, horrible, horrible person that extends back into all his real estate dealings and then what he said on those tapes. So let's take Donald Sterling out of this conversation. I don't know Bob McNair. Never talked to him. Don't know anybody that knows him that would tell me one way or the other. I can't speak to what Bob McNair is or is not. I don't know that what he said in those meetings makes him a racist. What bothers me is the people who say if you're offended by what he said, that you shouldn't be offended because this doesn't make him racist. Now, to me, if I can't go one way, you can't go the other. You can't take that sentence and go, he's not racist. You don't know that, just like I don't know that he is. So let's not even have the racist conversation, because that's a really obviously hefty allegation to make, and we have nowhere near any kind of proof to say with certainty. So let's not go that far. Let's just simply focus on the fact that he made a horrible choice of words.
Right.
And yes, I mean, our buddy John Kincaid, our colleague on the weekends here and works in Atlanta.
Hey, my buddy.
My buddy John Kincaid, was on the air yesterday and was tweeting about this, talking to people as if no one knows what that metaphor is. Everyone knows what it is. We've all used it, but when you use certain words in certain contexts, they carry heavier weight. So, I mean, let's not even, why are we parsing and going into the semantics about what he said? He said inmates run the prison.
And then to try to place it upon the front office, the NFL headquarters, those the commissioner and his team. Call me crazy, don't call me stupid. I wasn't talking about the player. I was talking about the commissioner Goodell and his team and what they've been doing.
Anytime you extend the apology the second time around, I'm not believing the first one.
Thank you.
Like if you and you know, to be honest, he's writing those statements and they're releasing him through the team. He's Bob McNair. He's a billionaire. He's got about probably 7 PR people on his payroll. They're all sitting in a room, and if he was talking about owner, like the league office, that would have been in the original apology.
Right.
And you would have said, I wasn't talking about the players.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking about Roger Goodell and his cronies. So let's move on. But you didn't say that. And then even when he said it on Saturday, they wrote it so confusingly that people didn't know what he was talking about either, because he said it wasn't about the players. It was about, and I should have the full thing in there, but he used the word they, and they seem to connect to owners, not the front office. So people first were like, oh, now he's calling out ownership, but he's not. He's calling out the front office.
Yeah.
It was so poorly worded and poorly constructed, and you can't add excuses on to your secondary apology. It just doesn't work like that. But again, what he said, I think, I hope, I assume, was just a very, very poorly timed choice of words. But maybe it does, I think what's safer to say is it does reflect how he views employees, not skin color.
Right, and to your buddy, he's saying you don't know who this man is. Well, Dwayne Brown, who just now
knows him,
back into the fold after his holdout, he's shared with us other anecdotes.
Right.
So you couple all that together.
Right, DeAndre Hopkins knows him.
Yeah, I think we can now say with some assurance that this guy is not who you think he is. And these guys work for him. They've been in his company for a while. And he said these things, and they're bringing those things to light. That gives you a little bit more insight into who someone is.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he's just a bad boss, a tough boss. Because employees don't like their bosses sometimes. And these guys argue and bicker and negotiate over millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And Dwayne Brown just had a holdout. And DeAndre Hopkins went home for a day last year because he wanted a new contract, which he didn't get then. And again, we end up in this place where we're not talking about the real things. We're arguing over verbiage and lexicon. And then yesterday, people are condemning Hopkins for only going home from practice, not skipping a game. If you're really upset, skip a game. And then everybody's kneeling before, basically every Texan player kneeled before the game in Seattle yesterday. And we're talking again about people kneeling and what are you doing and what's your message. And now we're not doing this. And we're still not talking about the facts and what people are offended by and what these players are fighting for and what they're kneeling for. Always talking about the vehicle and the machinations of it, not what's at the core issue here, that there is disconnect and unhappiness from one group towards another, and it doesn't seem like anyone cares about fixing that, which I can't imagine how frustrating that is for those who are trying to fight the fight.
Well
Ross,
said.
Ross Tucker, SiriusXM NFL Radio, is next on Gio and Jones on CBS Sports Radio.